It's wonderful to see everybody, and as I mentioned earlier today, it's a great honor and a privilege to have the opportunity to be back in Teaneck, my hometown, a place that had a tremendous influence on me, and from which I am so proud to have emerged and been taught and educated. And it's a great honor and privilege to be able to be here, and I want to express my hakaras hatov to my dear friend Rabbi Baum, and to the Baum family for hosting us and for inviting us. I have learned and continue to learn so much from Rabbi Baum, and the community is so fortunate for his leadership. The RCA, the community of rabbis, is so fortunate for his leadership as well. And I want to thank all the sponsors who made the Shabbos possible, in particular our hosts who showed us such gracious hospitality. We had such a wonderful time with Avi and Becky Katz. Thank you so much. A few years ago, I was sitting in my usual seat in the front of our shul in Boca Raton, and from a distance, I heard a man who was breathing somewhat heavily, as if he were asleep. So I looked over in his direction, expecting to find that he was passed out, that he had fallen asleep, and as many do, if they don't snore out loud, at least they breathe heavily when nodding off. And to my surprise, when I looked over, I found that he was wide awake. So I realized that the individual was breathing so heavily, not because he was sleeping, but because he was somewhat overweight and out of shape, and clearly not taking very good care of himself. So davening ended, but I had continued to think about it, so I went over to him later in the day and I suggested gently as I could, that I was concerned about his well-being. I was concerned about his health. And he responded, "Thanks, Rabbi, but I'm good." So what does that mean, that you're good? Don't you think you should exercise, take more care? If I could hear you breathing from that far away, I'm really concerned about you. Rabbi, I said, I'm not interested. I'm good. And with that, we ended the conversation. But a few days went by, and that conversation and that memory continued to bother me. And the concern for the individual, I felt compelled to try again. So I went over and I said, "Listen, I think you should go for a walk a couple times a week. It's not a big deal. I'm not trying to impose anything on you, but thank God you're retired and you have time. And I'm telling you, I'm concerned about you. I think you should go for a walk. You know, there's remarkable health benefits of a simple walk a couple times a week. Give it a shot." And again, the man told me politely, "Rabbi, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not interested. Just leave it alone." A few more days passed, and I couldn't stop thinking about this man. I felt that I had heard his labored breathing for a reason. Nothing's a coincidence. It's a beautiful insight of the Baal Shem Tov on the Mishnah in Avos that says, "Dam alamala mincha, you should always know what is above you. Ayin roa v'ozen shamas, v'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtavim. An eye is watching, an ear is listening, and everything you do is recorded." And the Baal Shem Tov says about this, "Dam alamala mincha. If you know that God is above you, the omnipotent one who orchestrates the world, then you'll realize that ayin roa, that whatever you saw, you were meant to see. That uzen shamas, whatever you overheard, you were meant to overhear. And you can't think that you are exempt. You can't walk away and say, this has nothing to do with me. But when you are exposed to, when you are near something that you heard or you saw, it was for a reason. And you have to react." And says the Baal Shem, "V'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtavim," what you do in response and how you react will be recorded in perpetuity. And so I felt, for some reason, very hung up on the fact that I had heard this man, his breathing, that it bothered me and that I was concerned about him. So I decided to approach him one last time, applying the principle of asking someone to lead davening. Three times, then you give up. So I went up to him a third time and I offered what I thought was an offer that he could not refuse. I said, "You know, I have an idea. I'm going to come to your house, and two or three times a week, you and I will go for a walk together. That's how much I'm concerned. That's how much I believe you need to address this. I'll find the time. I'm coming over. We'll go for a walk together." And again, for a third time, he looked back at me and he said, "No thanks. I'm not interested." So I was incredulous. You're not interested? You're not interested in living long? You're not interested in being able to get on the ground and play with your grandchildren? You're not interested in being around for your family? What does that mean, I'm not interested? And I'll never forget his response. He said three words. It's not me. It's not me. He said, it's not you? It's not you to be healthy? He said, exactly, Rabbi. It's not me. Give up on trying to change me. It's just not me. And those words haunted me, and those are the words that I think about this time of year. Because after that story, at first I thought to myself, who thinks such a thing, let alone says such a thing? It's not me to be a better person or take better care of myself or make improvements in my life. It's not, who says such a thing? But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that some degree or another, every one of us not only think that, but we say that, and we feel that, regarding some aspect or area of our life that really we should be addressing or changing or improving. But instead, we conclude and we say to ourselves, it's just not me. So in our limited time, before we say slichos, I want to talk to you about tonight the it's just not me syndrome, and a suggestion of perhaps how we can break out of it, how we can improve. Tonight begins the countdown to Rosh Hashanah. And if you wake a Jewish child in the middle of the night and say, what's Rosh Hashanah all about? They'll tell you that Rosh Hashanah is all about tshuva. It's all about judgment. It's all about introspection and reflection. It's about addressing the mistakes and the shortcomings in our lives and repairing them. The problem is that not only is judgment absent from the Torah description about Rosh Hashanah, which is a topic unto its own, a very important question, that which our rabbis establish and describe Rosh Hashanah as a Yom HaDin, a day of judgment, if you open the Chumash and simply look, Zichron Truah, there's no mention of judgment. But even more so, if you look at the Machzer, open a Rosh Hashanah Machzer, and you'll notice that there's no reference to Chet. There's only no mention, almost no mention at all, of what we translate as sin, or we talked earlier this morning, mistakes, lost opportunities, forgiveness. The Machzer omits any reference to tshuva and what it's about. We don't say slichos on Rosh Hashanah. We don't recite vidui on Rosh Hashanah. Some have the minhag, the custom of omitting the first line of Avinu Malkeinu on Rosh Hashanah because it's Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha. And so many have the custom not to say that. We make no reference to chet, no reference to tshuva. So it's bizarre. Rosh Hashanah is supposed to be the day of judgment. The shofar is supposed to evoke from within us, arouse us to address the failures and shortcomings in our lives. And yet if you look at the liturgy, if you look at the Machzer, it's absent any of these references. And the Rav Zatzal had a magnificent insight, which I think applies not only to appreciating Rosh Hashanah, but beginning tonight's slichos, the days leading up to Rosh Hashanah and this entire season. And I'd like to suggest to you that the Rav's insight, the Rav's answer to this anomaly is perhaps a fantastic strategy for how every one of us can overcome the it's not me trap. Said the Rav, before you arrive at the process of tshuva, even before you begin to address change, there's a preliminary stage. Before tshuva, before you confront mistakes and confess and pledge about the future, said the Rav, there's a preliminary stage and it's called Hirhur Tshuva, the awakening of tshuva. Now this stage is not nearly as clearly defined as tshuva itself. Tshuva, we all know the Rambam's famous formula that you have to regret the past, and you have to confess, and you have to make a Kabbalah al-Asid, you have to pledge not to revisit, and not to do the same thing in the future. It's not nearly as articulated or developed, but it's as, or maybe even in some ways, more important because it is a prerequisite to tshuva. Without Hirhur tshuva, without this preliminary stage, no real tshuva, no real change is possible. Said the Rav, before we can change, we have to believe that we have the capacity to change. Before we can make any adjustments or repairs, before we commit to do anything differently, we have to believe that we can, that it is within us, that it can be me, that I can let go of my natural tendencies or habits or routines. Before we can grow, we have to believe that we can yet grow. Because if we don't really believe it, if like that man we feel, it's just not me. I'm set in my ways. This is who I am. I'm that guy. I'm that woman. This is me. Then we can say all the achets in the world and hashamnus, bagadnus, all the slichos in the world, all the davening in the world. We can go through all the motions, the slichos and Rosh Hashanah, and aseres and tshuva and Yom Kippur and Ne'ilah. But if we don't believe that we can change, then we most certainly never will change. The Rav developed this notion of this preliminary stage, of this prerequisite, called Hirhur Tshuva, based on the Gemara in Kiddushin Mentes. The Gemara there says something startling. The Gemara says that if a person walks out of McDonald's eating a double cheeseburger, and they've walked away from the Shabbos they've just violated, and they have grossly violated so many mitzvahs in the Torah, and then they walk up to a woman and hand her a ring and say, Hareat mikudeshesli amenash amit tzadik. You are betrothed to me on condition that I am a righteous person. So I would have thought the punchline of the Gemara is, what is this, a joke? Look at the person's track record. Look at where they've come and what they've just done. Of course such a marriage is invalid. Of course the wedding is not formalized. Amenash amit tzadik, this is a tzadik, that person's righteous. But the Gemara Kiddushin says that the Kiddushin is chal, that it's a valid betrothal, that the wedding, the bond is formed. Why? Shema hir hir betshuva. Yeah, the man just walked out of the double cheeseburger and violating Shabbos and speaking Lashon Hara and shitting out his income taxes. He just did everything wrong. But as he walked up to her to hand her the ring, maybe he completed and fulfilled that preliminary state. Maybe he was mahar hir betshuva. Maybe as he approached her, he thought to himself, you know what? All those behaviors and actions, that's not me. There can be a new me. I can yet change. I'm going to be different. Shema hir hir betshuva is legitimate enough, it's meaningful enough, that a kedushin is chal based on it. This preliminary prerequisite stage, it seems so insignificant, but without it, no real change can happen. And it may sound and seem obvious, but so many people have given up on themselves. They've entered an age or a stage of life where they think it's too late, or I don't have the willpower, or I don't have the support system in my family, or among my friends, or in my community, where there are too many variables that are stopping me, the pressures and stresses, my job, whatever the case may be, that, you know what, it is what it is. Isn't it good enough? I'm showing up at shul in the middle of the night, I'm saying this, change? So my friends, it all begins with the belief that we can yet change, that is within us. If you talk to any pediatric endocrinologist today, they'll tell you something amazing. As a result of all the hormones in our food and milk and shampoo even that are going into our children's hair, children's growth is being highly affected. Some children are maturing too slowly, some are maturing too quickly, very few are just right. And so the result is there's an increase, a great increase, in the amount of children taking growth hormone to stimulate their development or to pace their development. So I asked an endocrinologist, how do you know what dosage to give? How do you know what child is eligible to receive it? It's fascinating. Doctors do a bone age study. They x-ray a child's left wrist. And by examining the growth plates and the resulting x-ray, they can predict with a very high accuracy exactly how much time is left for that child to grow. Child's got 6 months, 8 months, there's a window of a year and a half. I'm sorry, it's too late. But by looking at that x-ray, they can tell how much time the child is left to grow, and they can prescribe a dose of human growth hormone to maximize the child's height in the time that they have left. And when I heard that, I thought to myself, isn't it remarkable that what's true for our bodies is not at all true for our souls? Physically, we have a finite window to grow. And when that window closes, you can take all the growth hormone in the world. It's too late. It's too late. You may want to be 7 feet tall, you may want to dunk a basketball, but wherever you're at, my friends, that's where you're at. You're as tall as you're going to get. But what's true for our bodies is not at all true for our souls. There is no window that closes. We have the potential to grow spiritually and emotionally at any point in our lives. It's never too late. We're never done growing. A person could be 95 years old. They could be on their deathbed and experience a growth spurt. All they need is hirhur tshuva, the decision, the attitude, the belief that things can change, that we can be different, that our lives can look different, that we can develop new habits, the right habits. And so I submit to you that tonight, Slichos night, through Rosh Hashanah, are not about tshuva. It's not about actually making the changes per se. For that we have 10 days, or the days after Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah is the catalyst. It should stimulate the tshuva, which culminates with Yom Kippur, which will reflect whether we've actually made those changes in our lives. But from tonight until and through Rosh Hashanah, it's not about tshuva, it's about hirhur tshuva. It's about believing we can change, that we're not done growing, that we're not a fixed me that can't be altered. Tonight, through Rosh Hashanah, is about believing that for us, no matter what stage, no matter what circumstance, no matter what age, no matter what conditions in our life, it's the belief that the best is yet to come. The great architect Frank Lloyd Wright was once asked at the end of his career, of all of your designs of the magnificent buildings, which is your favorite one? And he answered, my next one. The belief that the best is always yet to come. Our best is not behind us. Our growth spurt didn't end with our Judaic studies curriculum in high school, or the year we spent in Israel if we went, or if we went to a Jewish university, but that our greatest growth spurt is yet ahead of us. Throughout this time of year, we repeat the phrase, we're going to start tonight, Al tashlichenu le'eis zigna kechlos kochenu al ta'azvenu, which is normally translated as, don't cast us away in our old age. When our strength gives out, don't forsake us. But if that's the case, don't cast us away in our old age, it should say bi'eis zikna, not li'eis zikna. Why do we say al tashlichenu le'eis zikna? Don't cast us away. Don't give up on us. Don't give in on us. Li'eis zikna. The Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg Zatzal, understood this sentence in an entirely different way, and you'll never say it again the same way. He explains that our impression is that young people have vitality and strength and energy. They have their whole life ahead of them to grow and mature and develop and plan and implement and change. But old people, we're under the impression that the older you get, the more set in your ways, the more fixed in your behavior, the more unlikely you are to change. That's our paradigm. Young people are evolving and developing and growing, and old people are fixed and they're set. Says the Tzitz Eliezer, well, we ask Hashem, Al tashlichenu le'eis zikna, don't cast me away or give up on me as if I can't change. Don't give up on me as if I see myself as an old person, set in my ways. Don't forsake me when I don't believe I have the strength to change. When I feel like a zakein, when I feel like I'm old and it's too late, and it is what it is, and it's just not me. God, al tashlichenu. Even in that moment, when I seem weak and hopeless, God, continue to believe in me. Give me the strength, whether I'm young or old, healthy or infirm. Give me the strength to believe that I have the capacity to change, that I can be different, that it is me to be better. It's just not me. Can't be part of our vocabulary. We can't fall into a trap of thinking that I'm not part of that particular chevra, or I fit a specific mold, or I've been doing it this way for years. but I can't change. Tonight is about Hirhur Tshuva. Tonight is about looking at our lives and identifying the ways that we need to improve, and first and foremost, believing it can happen. Envisioning it, picturing it, feeling it, imagining what it would be like if we implemented those changes, believing we can change. That it can be me to be one of those people who goes to shul. It can be me to set aside time for learning. It can be me to give more tzedakah. It can be me to volunteer for chesed. It can be me to be more patient. It can be me to be more loving. It can be me fill in the blank. It can be me. There's a man in our shul who shared with me an amazing story. I only know him as a healthy, thin, functional, fantastic guy. But he told me that over 30 years ago, he weighed over 300 pounds and was a complete alcoholic. And his family members and his friends had approached him multiple times, begging him to take care of himself. But he always rejected them, he always rebuffed their efforts to change. They tried to do an intervention and it didn't work. Because he told them, as he said to me, he told them, it's just not me. I'm the fat guy. I'm the life of the party. I'm the guy that drinks and goes over the line. It's just not me. And so despite the countless efforts, he rebuffed his family and friends. And things were turning dire. But then something happened. He had this epiphany, this awakening. He had a moment of what the Rav would call Hirhur Tshuva. Something changed. That he believed that it could be him. He realized that his society and his upbringing and the chocolate cake and the beer were not holding him back. That the only thing that was holding him back from changing was his own self-imposed limitation of believing, it's just not me. So he went on and told me that he lost 200 pounds and he conquered his alcohol addiction and he was a fully functional, you'd never know any of that past if you knew him today. So I asked him, what I think is probably the obvious next question, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? How'd you make the change? So he told me, when I realized that it can be me to be healthy and it can be me to be clean, I decided that if it will be me, I have to go outside and take the first step. So he went right outside that day that he had that Hirhur Tshuva, that he began to believe in himself. He went outside and he took a step. And the step turned into a walk, a daily walk. And after a few weeks, the daily walk turned into a daily jog of a block. And after a few more weeks, the jog turned into a daily run. And ultimately, it turned in to his completing 2 Ironman triathlon competitions. You know what a triathlon, an Ironman is? It's a 2.5-mile swim, followed immediately by a 112-mile bike ride, followed immediately by a 26.2-mile run. A 350-pound alcoholic lost 200 pounds and ran 2 Ironmen simply because he decided to say, it could be me. He decided to envision a life that was totally different from the one he was leading. And so that's my message to you and to me and to all of us tonight. To believe that it can be us. Whatever we think is holding us back doesn't have to. That dream of the life, the marriage, the parenting, the relationship with family, the job, the healthy lifestyle, the total learning, the quality davening, the chesed, whatever until now we've been saying, that's him, that's her, that's not me. Hirhur Tshuva. It's about believing in ourselves and believing that it can be us. Because Judaism teaches, Ein davar ha'omei b'fnei ha'ratzon. There's nothing that stands in the face of will. The Rabbi Eliyahu of Gedalia Shor explains that our actions and our behaviors are limited. Our speech is finite, there's only so much we can say. But our will, our ratzon, our ability to dream about who we can become and what we want to accomplish is limitless. There is nothing that's holding us back from dreaming and from pursuing those dreams. And you know why you should believe in yourself? You know why you should experience here her tshuva? Experience that belief in the capacity to change? Because every one of us has the greatest endorsement in the world. So tonight, certain newspapers are endorsing certain candidates. Everybody's pursuing the right endorsement. Every one of us have the greatest endorsement. And we say it every day. When you woke up this morning, the first words hopefully on your lips were, "Moda ani lefanecha, melechai lekayim." I'm so grateful to you, Hashem. You didn't say ani mode, you said "Moda ani," which grammatically is a much poorer construct. And the reason you said it is because a Jew's first word can't be ani about anything. So we say "Moda ani" rather than ani mode. But how does "Moda ani" end? Rabbah emunasecha. Rabbah emunasecha. Which means, your faith, God, is Rabbah, it's great. Did it ever occur to you? What does God have faith in? We're supposed to have emuna, we have faith in God. Who does God have faith in? What does it mean, Rabbah emunasecha, your faith is great? And the answer is, God's faith is in each and every one of us. He has endorsed our living, our life, our existence. And how do you know that? How can I be so certain that God has endorsed our very life and existence? Because you woke up this morning. And if you're yet here to live another day, it means you have more to accomplish, more to contribute to this world, more to grow, more to achieve, more to change, more to develop. We're not done. Al tashlichenu. God, don't dismiss us. La'isigna. Even when I feel like I've given up hope in myself, I feel old and infirm, and I'm set and I'm stuck. God, al tashlichenu. And God responds, Rabbah emunasecha. If we are here, if we woke up this morning, we're not yet done. And that alone should motivate us towards here or tshuva. That alone should motivate us to believe in ourselves and in our capacity to change. That we have what to accomplish, what to give this world. Rav Yisrael Salanter once passed the shoemaker's stall lit at night. He saw that the shoemaker was still there. So he said to him, "Why are you still working? What are you doing? It's late at night, it's dark out. Why don't you go home?" And the shoemaker turned to Yisrael and he responded, "Because as long as there's oil in the lamp, there's work to do. As long as there's oil in the lamp, there's work to do." And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter thought to himself, what a stunning statement. As long as there's oil in the lamp, as long as the neshama still burns within our guf, there's work to do. We can yet still grow. It can be me. And so tonight, as we recite Slichos, I invite you to dream. I invite you to use your imagination to dream about a better you. Imagine becoming a brand new me. Know that your future is not yet written. The next chapter is waiting for you to write it. And tonight is when we begin to put that pen to paper.